Welcome to Film Sack, a very special edition of Film Sack, as you can tell from our freely available and not licensed version of...
Celebrating the music of John Tesh.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty bad, actually, but that's partly why I grabbed it. I think
is that a John Tesh thing? Is that like...
No, I don't know what it is. Or... Some
it
weird...
does sound like something like
can
that.
Can you
though.
Insert Oshur in here somewhere?
Yeah, I can put an Oshur in.
On the fly?
Actually, right. No, I don't have Oshur handy. Aww. Actually, maybe I do. Hold on. Oshur. Nope, I don't. Okay, you know what? We'll insert a different Fletcher instead. Here you go. How about this one?
I've only got one gun.
Well, that's dumb. How about this
Maybe
one?
Maybe you'd like...
No, that's 8 minutes long. Let's go to a short one.
Oh,
God. Here we go. How about this one?
Monkey wannabe.
There you go. Or
Bloodsport.
Or...
Ah!
Hello.
Oh, yeah.
Hello.
Hey, hey.
Hello.
Okay, there you go. That's all. It's all the Fletcher wow. You can stand.
You're ruining Star Wars.
Kind of, yeah. So what we're doing is a very interesting thing. First of all, we're recording it on Monday, and I'm Scott Johnson. There are the two Bryans, and then, of course, the Randy. We're all here. And we're not talking about a film we watched. There's nothing streaming right now to see. Well, we are talking
about
a film we watched.
A film we watched, yeah.
But not on Netflix, not, you know, not our normal thing. If the music wasn't that enough of an indicator, I don't know what was. We are instead talking for the next... sizable amount of time about Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. So it awoke. We all went and saw it. We saw it over the weekend. This is chock full of spoilers. So if you're here and worried about that, do not listen to this episode because
Miracle.
It will be full of it. It's all spoilers all day long. Top
like Han dies.
We're going to spoil the most spoilery things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like the things you would, like if you guessed some of the spoilers, we're going to find the ones you wouldn't have guessed and we're going to spoil them.
Sure.
We're going to spoil the next three movies as well.
Yeah.
Two movies, yeah.
Well, you can do the little side stories too, the Rogue One and the Boba Fett one and all that.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. They got that all coming. You guys, I don't know if you realize this, but this is out now, obviously. And then next December, Rogue One.
Yeah.
And then the following May, Force
episode eight,
which is insane.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Within a 2 year period or a year and a half period, you will have three Star Wars movies. Think of that.
It's impressive that episode eight is coming out in a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't expect that to be such a fast turnaround.
That's like breakneck speed for Star Wars. That's like how many parsecs? Like 12
that's
parsecs.
That's a lot of parsecs. 14. Right. Wait a minute. What did he say in the movie? Something like that.
And how is that going to affect it, right? Like, you know, obviously the movies are going to be, I'm assuming the movies are going to be great quality because they wouldn't churn out something that's crap.
Right.
Yeah. They would never do that.
Yeah. We would never get bad Star Wars movies.
But,
never.
But part of the thing, at least as a kid for me, was the anticipation 3 years waiting for the next Star Wars to come out.
I had forgotten about the next Star Wars by the time the next Star Wars came out. I'm serious. I remember being a kid and Return of the Jedi come. I was like, oh my God, they're going to have another one?
Yeah. Yeah. No, so, but don't you think kids today with as many distractions as they have to try to entertain them, it's so different now that you need to ramp up the between time.
Maybe.
We didn't really have trilogies when I was a kid. I mean,
well, you did.
Even
you just didn't know it, you know? Like, Star Wars kind of established that as a thing you could do and get away with. Feels like.
80s anyway. was totally trilogy time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
And it's, I mean, look, if I was a kid, well, first of all, if I saw this and I was a kid, I'd be jazzed because this was awesome, right? Real good movie. Yeah. Let's get that out of the way first. We all really liked it, right? Everyone liked it. Nobody's saying it's the most important film in the history of mankind, but we are all saying it's a great Star Wars movie. Am I wrong in that?
Yeah, absolutely. No. It's absolutely top four all Star Wars movies.
Yeah, easily for me. Mm-hmm. I think it goes five, and then it's kind of, we were talking about this on the morning stream, but it's like five and then this are kind of making out a little bit. That's how high up it is for me.
Five might still be on top, but but seven is, you know, trying to say, let's try something a little different. Maybe let me be on top.
I think four and seven were like separated at birth.
Yeah, maybe. So. Well, okay,
hold on. We're not talking right now. We're just talking about
quality.
What order we'd put them in as far as quality.
Yeah, what order would you
is
put them in?
Is that what you're talking about? Because like four and seven for you? Or
I think what he's saying is that seven is basically a remix of four in a lot of ways, which I don't actually think is a knock against it. I actually think it's into its benefit, but we can talk about, I think we should talk about that in a minute.
I mean, when it's been this many years since the original, I mean, I think totally. I think it's acceptable.
It's their way of, it's almost like they're rebooting it without rebooting it, because you've still got, oh, a young person with big dreams who's stuck on a desert planet and doesn't know about their destiny, and then finds out he's got this, there's so much more going on with her. There's a girl this time, but you know, it's pretty much Luke Skywalker again. And then, you know, there's a moment where there's a lightsaber stuck in the snow. Boy, that didn't remind me of anything. And trying to force pull that over here.
But there's, you know, all through the entire Star Wars franchise, there's repeating elements. Like, you've got the Millennium Falcon stuck to the back of a Star Destroyer hiding out. Then you've also got Obi-Wan Kenobi doing the same thing with an asteroid when Jango Fett's searching for him.
I forgot about the prequels doing
that. Can I give you what I think is a better example of something that happens over and over and over and no one ever talks about it?
Is it about an android with a map stuck in its hoo-ha and you got to save the android?
More often than the three times that's happened.
Okay.
Way more often. In this universe, if you are a principal character and you need to escape conflict, you run off and you can't be found. Obi-Wan runs to Tatooine. Yoda runs to Dagobah. Apparently, Luke Skywalker in his old age runs to Ireland. Like, what you do. I was actually thinking, the only character I can think of, you can't make a case that they ran off in a huff, is Darth Vader.
Mm.
He faces his problems head on.
Yeah,
which
it's
is
interesting.
Kind of his problem.
There's a real ethic to that, right? Like he sticks around. Everybody else with force powers gets the hell out of Dodge.
They run off and hide somewhere, and for long stretches, like it doesn't really say good things about Obi-Wan Kenobi that he's on Tatooine. I don't know. Sleeping with sand people. I don't know what he's doing for all those years. So you know what they sound like when they have sex with you.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly right. He changed that later, though. Lucas did. He made him scream or something. Super dumb. I think actually I have a clip of it. You guys want to hear it? Here you go. This is the sound it makes now. All right. That would scare me off.
I needed that.
Yeah, no problem. And your earphones. But let's do the order thing real quick. I say everyone wants to hear order, so we're doing it. Okay, so I say I say 5, 7, and 4 is right next to it. It's literally there. I mean, they really are close to each other. So I don't want to make 4 seem like I'm throwing it under the bus and giving it third place. But anyway, then I'd say 4, then I'd say 6, then I'd say 3, 2, 1, or maybe 3, 1, 2. I really hate Clone Wars.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say. I'm ready to declare, after seeing this movie twice, which I have in the last few days, I'm ready to say that I like it just a tiny Admiral Akbar butt hair more than
he has butt hair. Oh no, it's a crap.
I never knew that was a unit of measurement.
It is. It's like parsecs.
Yeah, parsecs and credits and Admiral Akbar butt hairs. Exactly.
Right, exactly.
The big three. So wait a minute. You're putting that by a butt hair where? In what position? Number one?
In front of 5.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
More than 5. I love 5. But 5 has so much sentimental power with me that we just watched it recently. And when I found out that my complete Saga Blu-ray set that I bought on August 4th, 2011 from Amazon was missing disc 5 and in its place had two copies of the bonus material for episodes 1, 2, 3.
Oh, that made me so mad when you told me that.
Before the opening crawl had finished on watching the DVD, throw up in my mouth a little bit, I had a steel case episode 5 Blu-ray copy ordered from Amazon.
Oh, that sucks. That's the one you want to have in Blu-ray.
That's the one you want to have in the best
quality. Well, now that they've announced that they're doing the entire original trilogy untouched by Lucas and his stupid ideas, post.
Yeah, I'll buy it again. The only reason I was holding on to the Laserdisc version, because I have the Laserdisc with the unspecial everything. Han shoots first.
The unspecial edition.
Dead Darth Vader looks like an old fat guy, old fat ghost.
Darth Vader looks like an old fat goat.
He really does have a waddle in that shot.
Yeah.
He does.
Yeah.
He's got a waddle. He's got a really high cone head. Mm-hmm. It's weird.
It is weird. When he takes the thing off and has the harmonica on or whatever. Yeah.
He looks really
weird. He's about to start into some Blues Traveler, and Luke is like, look, I'm hurt, and I need you to wrap it up.
Yeah, that sounds right to me. All right, Randy, I know that you have been vocal about your not liking five as much as the rest of us, but I'm very Seven. Curious about your order.
Oh, five. Oh, yeah, yes. Five. Okay.
Yeah.
So here's my thing. I've been trying really hard to imagine myself years from now, when I'm trying to like rank and rate these things, because it's just very hard to see the forest for the trees when you come out of seeing a movie. I came out of Phantom Menace loving that movie, and it just did nothing but diminish every time I thought about it for years, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing, like, I can't wait to see this movie again as soon as I can get to see it sometime over this holiday. Yeah. I can't wait to see it again. I didn't see it in 3D. I'm looking forward to seeing that, by the way. The last shot of the film was made for 3D. I can't wait to see that.
Oh, the outside shot of the zooming around, yeah.
Yeah. So, so I like the film a lot, but I think I'm going to end up seeing it as this downward slide in quality. Like, I love 4, and then I don't like 5 as much, quite as much, and then I don't like 6 quite as much, and then I don't like 7 quite as much, like that. I think that's how I'm going to end up ramping these movies. And it's because I saw Episode 4 so many times before I ever saw any other Star Wars movies, and I was a kid, and Empire Strikes came out, and I it was just hard. I didn't appreciate it. It was long. It was boring. There wasn't as much of the, you know, Han Solo cowboy stuff. And then, of course, as far as I was concerned as a kid, Han Solo got killed at the end. And so,
because that's true. That's exactly what we thought. He's like, oh, he's carbonite. He's done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So then we finally get to Episode 6. I'm now too old for Ewoks to grab me. So I don't like that one as much as 5, and I didn't like that one as much as 4.
You're never too old for Ewoks to grab you.
Well, if you're tall enough, if you're tall enough, they don't grab you the way you hope they
can
don't.
Can you imagine Ewoks reproducing?
No.
What a strange thought.
Now that you've mentioned it, no, but I can't imagine a furry convention with people in Ewok suits reproducing.
That's pretty much what it looks like. Yeah. That's pretty much what I imagine.
So
you
here's
that
the thing.
Scene in, you know that scene in E.T. when E.T.'s hiding in the closet and there's all the stuffed animals all bunched up around him?
Yes.
That's what it looks like.
That's
like a big Ewok orgy. Ooh.
Gross.
So here's the thing, and this is just my opinion. I don't think I'm making an argument here. Han Solo is my favorite character. I'm thrilled he's back, but halfway through this movie, I realized, oh, shit, Han Solo has gotten way too many lines. He's going to die.
Yeah, oh, no,
and
I had the feeling, too.
Dreading it.
Well, I had the feeling, but I didn't. I thought, we live in a time of Sopranos and a million other shows that like to yank the carpet out from under you for what you expect to happen. So yeah. I liked that in that I thought I was being tricked. Then I thought he was for sure going to die. Then I thought I was being tricked again. And right up to the last second, I wasn't sure. And I liked that. I knew
I became sure when they were back talking to, I don't remember the woman's name, Maz Jobrani, whatever her name is.
Oh, and Maz Kanata.
Mazzy Star?
Whatever.
The old lady with the glasses, yeah. Yeah. She was awesome.
The worst character in the movie for me, by the way.
I loved her.
The character. I don't understand how she was so misused in this movie.
Really?
She's upcoming. They're establishing.
She ends up being one of several characters in this film that they fake killed. You don't know if she's dead. You don't know if Finn is dead. Yeah. You don't know.
Well, we know Finn's not because they got him back in the infirmary after.
But you don't know. Yeah. They could start out the next movie and say he didn't make it. I mean, you don't know.
It's like they could Alien 3 that thing.
He took a lightsaber to the spine.
He's like Newt. He's just gonna die.
He'll die in the opening crawl of Episode 8.
Anyway,
they mostly die in the beginning. Mostly, that's what she should say.
That was one of my complaints. Too many people that I'm not certain they're dead. Like even Han Solo, I'm pretty freaking sure he's dead. Not only did he take a lightsaber through the body and then fall down a never-ending pit? Why do they have so many of these in construction in this galaxy? I don't know.
Because they're awesome. Because they're great.
Then they blew up the planet he fell into. I'm pretty sure he's dead, but I'm not 100%.
But then again,
sure.
I'm 100% sure.
They do the same thing with Phasma, right? I mean, you know, was she in a trash compactor?
Yeah.
When the thing blew up, hopefully not.
Oh, she's coming back.
We talked about underused characters.
Yeah.
Oh, it's horrible.
Guaranteed, she's coming back. Though, there's no way she's not coming back.
Yeah. Well, Gwendolyn Christie has confirmed that she's in 8.
Okay, Brian.
Has to be.
You've seen it twice, Brian. I need you to explain something to me.
Sure.
Why are there 4 villains in this movie when she could have been 3 and 4? I don't understand the presence of Bill Weasley.
You don't. Okay, now back up.
No. That's a great thing about this is that with the Star Wars movie, and this is funny because I actually have this in my notes. You've got one Luke. Everybody goes to Tatooine. Find Luke. He goes to this, does this. He's the, you know, brings everybody together. Oh, guess what? He's got to go down the trench. Oh, did the other guy shoot the proton torpedoes into the little hole? No, it was Luke. Luke blew up the Death Star. Mm-hmm. In this movie, you've got a lot of Lukes, which is really cool. You've got, no one person who's responsible for all of this happening. Poe is fantastic.
Poe is fantastic. He blows up the. But he didn't die.
Yeah, he was good.
Yeah, well, he was going to die originally.
Yeah.
Finn was fantastic. Rey was fantastic. And they all, it's not just like these guys all kind of supported. Han supported Luke by shooting Darth Vader, getting him out of the way so Luke could shoot the down into the hole of the Death Star. But, everybody like had a specific thing that they did that was unique to their skill set that they could achieve.
Okay, but try to answer my question here, because my question is about question is about Chrome Barbie having been being relegated Barbie. To a Captain Phasma. Come on, joke. What's her name?
Captain Phasma.
That's really her name?
Yes.
Wow.
Part of Star Wars' power is to convince you that these names aren't stupid. It's part of the power of the movie.
I'm okay with it. Yeah. I'm okay with it. It's just you got to remember, I didn't see anything about this movie until I saw the movie.
Oh, that's right. You went in unsullied.
And then every time something was named, like, for whatever reason, we're no longer the Empire/Trade Federation. And for whatever reason, we're no longer the Rebel Alliance. And the new names of these factions, I'm just like, in one ear and out the other. I have no idea what they're called now.
The New Order, go ahead.
I kind of got them backwards.
Sprung from the ashes of Joy Division.
Okay, yeah, exactly. But anyway, come back to Chrome Barbie for a minute. I'm sorry, Captain Phasma for a minute.
Yeah,
sure.
Because here's what, seeing this movie, having no setup, I haven't read the book, and then seeing this movie and walking out, here's what I remember of her. She's a bad managerial joke. I need to see you in my office because you took off the...
True story.
She stands around while our two heroes steal a TIE fighter. Admittedly, they didn't, for whatever reason, the script didn't put her in a place to do something about it. But okay, whatever. She stands around. C, she gives up the shields like a hot knife through butter.
Quickly, yeah, yeah.
And then D, she presumably, it's a joke, so we don't know for sure, but she presumably gets thrown into a trash can. So that's it?
No, that's not it.
I think I saw her in a pilot seat at some point.
That's like saying you only saw Luke for a minute, and is that all you're going to get? No, of course not. This is a trilogy.
That was the very end of the movie, though.
This is a trilogy. This is no different.
Escapes.
This is
Kylo Ren didn't die on the planet too, right?
Right. There's no way. But it's like Han Solo. It's not Han Solo. It's like Boba Fett at the end of Empire. The end of Empire, he flies off the thing to do this Jabba the Hutt thing. We don't know jack about him or anything that's going on except he's a bounty hunter. That's all we're ever given with him. But we know in the third movie this stuff's going to have more flesh to it.
In the third movie, Boba Fett gets kicked into a hole. Like, that's it.
I agree that was a little short shrift for Boba Fett, no question.
I'm saying this Captain Phasma person got the short shrift up front. And I don't understand how they had this great character, and instead they keep having Bill Weasley walking around saying things. They should have had this character have some of those moments of badass.
I want to talk about Nux, who you call Bill Weasley.
That's his name, Nux?
Yeah, and by the way, all the...
Are you going to do this to the whole thing?
Not Nux,
right?
Sorry,
Hux. No, I'm not.
Hux, sorry, Hux with an H.
That guy's called Poe? What?
It's Hux with an H. Oh, Carter, that's so sad. My daughter just drew the saddest picture of Chewbacca.
Oh,
you guys got to see this.
Is she holding two pieces of Han Solo?
No, it's
trying to put them back together like C-3PO and
well, Bespin. You know the shot she did called Best Pals, which is her Han Solo hanging out. It's also called Best Pals, but it's Chewie sitting there with a wishbone, or Oh, is that a flower? Oh, I thought it was a wishbone, and then there was no one on the other side to pull it.
Wow.
Could I commission Carter to do a drawing of Chewbacca carrying around the pieces of Han Solo like he did with C-3PO?
Oh, dear Jesus.
Just his rotting corpse.
Han's eyes are X's, right? So you know he's dead?
I might have to do that one. That's really good. All right. Well, this is what I want to say about the villains. The Nux villain, or Hux, I guess is his name. This goes to my point about how this is basically episode four scrambled, because Hux is essentially the Peter Cushing character.
He's
Grand Moff Tarkin.
Yeah, Grand Moff Tarkin. He's the guy in charge.
Grand Moff Tarkin. That's what he's called.
Yes, Grand Moff Tarkin. I came in there not knowing that. But he's like the military half of this power vacuum. And then you got the Darth Vader wannabe guy who really wants to be like his grandfather, but is just kind of terrible at it. You've got equivalents for just about everything in that movie. Luke is Rey in a very, very real way. Finn is Solo, even though there's an actual Solo in this. He's a lot like him. He's sort of
Solo is divided up into several, he's Obi-Wan.
I mean, he's something to fight for. Mm-hmm.
You know, you're right. In this, he's much more like Obi-Wan. But if you split Finn and Poe in half, that's basically two halves of Solo. The unwilling, kind of conniving, I just want to get out of here, and I'm thinking of my own wants and desires of Finn before he kind of comes around. And then you got Poe, who's the, you know, sort of heroic, dashing, whatever.
So don't forget that they also did that very same thing. Jedi doesn't know his powers. He's on a planet, you know, on a sandy planet, gets picked up by somebody who knows exactly. Brandy's fourth favorite movie by his calculations.
Wait, five?
No, one.
No, he's
one. Okay.
It's episode one.
I'm just making sure I'm getting it right.
That would be my fifth favorite.
Is that your fifth favorite of the movies?
I think so. I think for me, the order is 4, 5, 6, 7, and then 1. And I don't really care about whether 2 or 3 is the worst. I guess 2 is the worst for me.
Wow. I can't believe you liked 1 better than anything. that 1 is not just the
so
very
one
last.
Is, because, 1 is because at the very so, end of my list.
Because it's so irrelevant to the rest of the series, I feel like I can grade it all on its own. Mm. It establishes nothing. It gives or takes nothing from the rest of the series of films. Right?
I agree with you 100%. Yeah, I agree with that.
That's why we have the machine order.
Yeah, the pod racing is the only thing that makes 1 even worth watching.
Listen, the pod racing is amazing. The
1
Darth
has
Maul
pod racing. Darth Maul is great. There are a couple of things to like. Clone troopers, as introduced, are pretty neat. Like,
they weren't introduced in.
No. We were still doing the droid army at this point.
Roger.
We didn't have any then. I didn't know that.
No.
We don't see the clones until Yoda shows up
and goes, "Look what I got."
Oh, right. You're right. Yeah, I freaking forgot when they did that. But okay, so fine. You got Darth Maul, you got pod racers, and that's it.
The problem is putting these films together with the other films. So that's why I say I separate out 1. For example, there is nothing that is harder on me as a viewer than General Grievous when he lights up with all these lightsabers. When he goes into full-on lightsaber spinning mode, I'm like, now tell me, how come the rest of existence there aren't any droids doing that? What?
Right.
How come C-3PO ain't doing that?
Jedi.
Vertically, like perpendicular spinning lightsabers, and
but
then
he
two
was,
side ones. Like
he was technically a cyborg, though. He had a human heart and was coughing all the time.
I'm just saying that it was one of those things.
A robot that does that, and Jedi's could just drive around on that robot.
Right. Yeah. Was he force sensitive? Did he have like a little metachlorian?
Who knows? See, that's a whole other problem. See, I can't even include
general.
These.
He wasn't a Darth.
I don't know. The point is that scene was intended to be badass, and it is, but in the context of all the other movies, it's nonsensical, so
totally
I don't
agree.
Like it as
totally,
a result.
Totally agree. Yeah, the Grievous stuff is horrifying.
Gives you Grievous.
Also, Ninja Yoda is a terrible idea. Like, there's a lot
I
of bad
hate
ideas.
Ninja Yoda. It was the thing that made me hate
Episode 2.
That movie so much.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. And I'll tell you what, Count Dooku.
Count Dookie. Yeah.
With the bent one.
That's the thing I liked was his bent saber. It's the only thing I liked about him is that it was a cool hilt and that was it. Everything else was stupid. Like those prequels, I think they're more like fanfic by the guy who created Star Wars. Like, they're just not great. This movie, for a lot of people and for everything I've read anywhere, kind of erased the problem. It kind of said, all right, look, we know what people like in Star Wars. Turns out it's not what George Lucas likes, but he knows, these guys know, Disney knows, Abrams knows, these guys know what we want, and they gave us what we want. And I usually feel pandered to when that happens, but I don't this time. I like what they gave me.
Because I don't feel pandered yet.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a big yet with all this, right?
Yeah. Like you imagine that maybe you've finally seen the last of C-3PO and you can go on without him just fine.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But talk about the most useless character in this film. He's basically there to deliver one joke.
Yep.
Oh, right. Maybe you didn't recognize me because of my red arm, which, by the way, I figured out has to be a merchandising thing, because once you buy a C-3PO figure from Star Wars, you don't ever need to buy another C-3PO action figure. Until episode one, it's like, oh, now I want the one where he doesn't have any plating. And,
oh, my gosh. Oh, I think you're right. Yeah.
I wanted a naked C-3PO. That's what I wanted.
Yeah. A little robot wiener. Is that what you want?
Yeah.
So this was a whole reason for them to say, nope, this is a brand new C-3PO figure because he's got a red arm.
Yeah, because
like, don't ask me about the backstory behind it.
I just listened to all of that, and I'm the cynical one? Okay, all right. Sure. I didn't even think about that. That never crossed my mind. It's a fair point. All I thought was, I'm so glad that at least half of these droids from the previous movies is asleep this whole thing, because they had worn on me. I no longer found the comic value in them. And BB-8 was set up to be a like serious robot. He was a character who didn't deliver a bunch of jokes, except of course the joke where he gives somebody else the finger.
Yeah.
Or thumbs up. You could call it thumbs up. I call it a finger. Mm-hmm. It looked to me like he was flipping them off.
Like he was giving the hot flaming bird.
I really liked BB-8. I thought he was great.
That is a great everything about it.
Yeah, everything is cool. And I just liked I liked the reverence that the things we tonally love about Star Wars were given. I was trying to talk about it without giving anything away this morning on the show, so I'm glad to do it now. But there's the scene where Rey overhears BB-8 being captured by like some junk collector on a weird looking.
Not just some junk collector. Wasn't it a cameo? No, it wasn't.
No, but it was badass, awesome, weird, never explained alien thing on top of what looked like some kind of weird hybrid robot creature thing.
That's
the Star Wars I love. The stuff where when I was a kid and I saw the cantina for the first time and I went, there's a devil guy in here and a hammerhead looking dude.
What is all this? A guy with walrus teeth. And I like how you get some of those elements in this. Like you see, you know, one of the first aliens you see, I think the first alien you see in the cantina is that thing that's got eyes kind of like a hammerhead shark.
Yep.
Right.
And you see him kind of poke his head up in the desert as BB-8 goes by, leaving the camp.
Yeah, that was great. And then they have a wipe. Like they, for any flaws the movie has, you cannot blame them for trying to match those bits. Yeah, because those bits are elusive and hard to explain why you like him, but it's world building without explaining everything. I just love that.
That's a great setup for our first roundtable question, which is, what is your favorite moment of characterization in this film?
Oh man, that's a good one.
There's several to choose from. Yeah. But I'm really curious. Like, what moment in this film did you go, oh, I really like this character right here, right now?
I liked everything Rey did.
I really did.
Seeing Rey leaning up against the foot of the tipped over AT-AT, chewing, you know, eating her spongy bread and putting on the helmet. Just, you know, that whole scene is just like,
when the bread popped up, did you not go, ooh?
Like kind of, yeah.
It's yeah.
Like, is that Jiffy Pop?
I'm with Brian. That was maybe my favorite.
I think we're all going to have the same answer to this question. So maybe we should.
I don't know. Maybe not.
Brian Dunaway's favorite characterization.
I think my favorite introduction of the character and the one that I could really relate to the most was Finn when he watched the death of
buddy.
Yeah, it was buddy, and he got the blood mark on his mask. That was just beautiful.
I have a thought about that.
That was
good. It's been bothering me since I saw it. Maybe you guys can fix this for me.
All right.
Mm-hmm. I don't like it that it takes the whole freaking movie for me to find out why Finn was such a head case at the beginning. At the beginning of this movie, all I'm seeing is a guy panting and panting and panting, and I don't like that. It's not entertaining. I don't have any reason to care about his internal turmoil. Later on, I found out he was a slave. He never had a name. He was on his first mission as a stormtrooper previously.
How much
he
later
was
on? Because
sanitation.
That was like revealed like within like the first five minutes.
When he's talking to Poe and yeah, like.
No, I don't feel like I really understood his backstory until much later when he's basically assaulting Death Star 3 with Han Solo. Mm. And that's when I finally found out.
You can call it Starbase or Starkiller.
Starkiller Base. Yeah.
I thought it was pretty well. I thought we pretty much knew because we hadn't discussed specifically Finn, but we had discussed where the troopers were coming from and they were being, you know, kidnapped from planets. So we already kind of established that. They went further into detail later on, but I felt like I knew Finn's character.
I liked it as a cold open to a character. I thought it was, I mean, it's a little tropey and simple. I mean, I'll give you that, but I liked seeing him. I like seeing something different than just an army of stormtroopers just doing everyone's bidding.
And, but just think of what the alternative is. You don't want the characters the first time you see them on screen to kind of give their exposition of, I'm Finn. I've been a slave all my life, and I really hated watching people die in that camp, so I want to leave, and I've had enough.
Really? No, not at all. But I also have a hard time catching up with someone sweating and panting and sweating and panting and panting and panting. Like, the first 10 minutes
of this movie.
You've
obviously never seen Ewok sex.
Yeah, I would like to.
oh, my God, you would? All right.
but the thing about Finn that grew on me is the same thing that ultimately redeems the characterization for me. I just don't have a moment where I can point at that character and go, that's it right there. That's it. That's the spot in this film, because his story is told backwards for me.
Interesting. I thought it was pretty straight up. I mean, I don't know. I felt like his character was just laid out really well. I felt like the things that he was doing, all of his motivations seemed honest. And it seems like something that I could put myself in his position. I could go, wow, I could totally be Finn. If my life was in that way, I could totally be Finn. Whereas I can't relate to Rey because I'm not supposed to. She's got the Force. I can't.
Well,
relate
and she's
to
got
that.
She's got every skill, right? She's a pilot. Right. She knows the electronics. She knows how to flood the place with gas. She's somehow acquired this huge bevy of super spy skills, and we're supposed to spend the whole time wondering exactly how she got to that point. Whereas
Finn's
way more basic.
Finn's us, and he's our eyes, like Han Solo was before him in other previous movies. And the best Star Wars movies always have that character. I would remind everybody the prequels had nobody like that. There was never that guy in those movies. And that
was Jar Jar Binks.
Was Jar Jar Binks.
He was the worst guy ever.
Misa so much like Jar Jar.
Well, let me tell you something that the movie succeeded at, in my opinion, that I didn't expect, and that was that I knew there were going to be a ton of practical effects, and I really appreciated those. And I appreciated the CGI where it was needed. But I didn't expect them to make a CGI character that basically is no different than trying to create Jar Jar Binks, except it's not a terrible character, and it's that the thousand-year-old lady. I forgot her name already.
Oh, okay.
And I really, really was compelled by her. I thought she was super interesting. She's that 12 Years a Slave girl.
Lupita Nyong'o.
Yeah.
And she was amazing. The voicing was amazing.
Yeah, really good.
I was disappointed, by contrast, in the new Gollum. I felt like it didn't I don't know. When I saw him, I realized, oh yeah, there's a rule in this universe that every evil has a master.
Yeah.
And so we've now been introduced to Bane, and at this point in the movie, I'm seeing this guy as Bane. And
I liked his modulation. That was cool.
Right. I loved his voice. I loved his modulation.
And at the point we meet Snoke, I'm still not convinced that Kylo Ren is exactly Darth Vader Jr. I'm not. I don't know.
No, and we shouldn't be. Right. And even through the film, you shouldn't be convinced that, because he is wrestling with that. Whereas Darth Vader was more committed to it until the very last act of the third episode 6.
Yeah, he committed when he killed all those kids in the Jedi Temple. At some point in the prequels or in the third movie, when he did that, that's the point of no return for Anakin Skywalker. I think that we saw the point of no return for Kylo Ren in this film.
His son redeemed him. That's why Darth Vader came around. He was redeemed by Luke, but here Kylo Ren has to squash what is of the light side by killing his father. So it's kind of
he even says he's wrestling with it, and he doesn't know if he can do what needs to be done.
So and, this leads to the next roundtable question, which is the big question in the film that is coming in from every direction, every discussion everybody has. They're asking this question, and I want to accept up front that we may have some different ideas and there's no proving anybody right or wrong, but is Kylo Ren, you know, throughout this movie, is he set against his sister, his cousin?
There's not a lot related to him. There's a lot of theories about that.
What do you think? When you watch this movie, what did you think coming out of the movie? Don't overanalyze it. What did you think? The movie told me what?
I told me they're cousins.
Okay, so she would be Luke's child. Daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah, Luke's and it's funny because
no question.
I maybe diminished that or didn't even think about that while the movie is going on, even though the signs, all the lightsaber stuff, the signs all kind of pointed to that. It was the credits and Tina leans over and says, so you think Rey is Luke's daughter? I'm like, oh yeah, I guess I was kind of thinking that and kind of blew off the thought or didn't even give it a second thought. Watching the movie the second time with that knowledge or with that, that paint, mm-hmm, you know, right, that tint, definitely makes me think that is what they're setting up for the next movie, because you hear, you know, you see all this stuff that Luke would know or let the Luke experience through that lightsaber.
Well, plus we know that Luke was training a bunch of young Jedi, right, to take everybody's place. He was trying to regenerate the Jedi force in the universe, and the Kylo Ren went nuts at some point and kind of screwed all that up, and so he fled. He was like, we can't do this. So we get out of there. And these kids that were there, it would make sense to me that they would all be scattered too. You don't want these force-sensitive, powerful kids to be targeted. So you put them in weird, obscure places like the deserts of Jakku or wherever other people ended up. And I'm not so sure that Finn didn't end up that way too.
Yeah, I don't think the Rey's part of that, because there was no acknowledgement. Like, it seems like...
sure she was. She was abandoned on the planet. Remember?
No, what I'm saying is, like, there was no, no. I don't think that she was part of Luke's training, and then,
right. So there's two things I know about Star Wars movies, and I've seen them all many, many, many times. One, if they're true to Star Wars movies, she's Kylo Ren's sister, even twin sister. And every time Leia and Han are talking about their son, they're purposely not talking about their daughter for whatever reason.
Right.
And we're going to have a problem, because Leia's strength in the Force is feeling things that are happening or, you know, special knowledge. That's her strength.
She's
and
Force
so for
sensitive.
For her to not recognize her daughter would be bizarre.
Yeah.
These Star Wars stories love that.
Yeah, but remember, I want everyone to go back for a second to the actual Mark Hamill quote from the first trailer, the first teaser, when he said, I have it.
Right.
My sister has it. And you have it too.
Mm-hmm. Which could
mean anything, but.
Yeah, it could.
But it does sound familial.
Yeah, it sounds very familial.
I think, of course. Yeah, having Rey be, I like your theory. I like the theory, and I like giving that some thought and saying, all right, how is that supported by the movie? How is that not supported by the movie? There's the moment when Rey sees Leia after the death of Han Solo, coming back to the Resistance base. I actually guess it's her first time, because she went over to the, she was on the Star Destroyer or the whatever. I don't know what they call the
Captain Phasma Hux. That's the one you're talking about.
Okay,
right. The Phasmobile.
If there's not a Phasmobile in the next movie, I'm out. No sale.
You think that even if Leia was trying to hide the fact from Rey that Rey was her daughter, at the moment that it seems like, oh, Han's dead, let's just kind of put that whole pretense aside and kind of break down. I think that we would have seen something there.
Yeah, I think so too.
The instant Han dies, Leia is rocked. I mean, mm-hmm, she gets incredible Force Wi-Fi.
Oh yeah, she's got. Yeah, that's always been her thing, though, right?
Yeah. I can't stand that. I could understand an unreliable narrator, right? The film isn't telling us the whole story. Mm-hmm. That's fine, but I would have a real hard time with. We're being completely misled on who their family is.
Yeah.
Having said that, if it's Leia, it'll bug me. The problem here is that Rey looks exactly like Natalie Portman. So you need her to be Amidala's granddaughter. It just makes sense.
I don't think she looks just like her at all. I think she looks very different than her.
And then once you decide, oh, wow, yeah, Rey really does look like Amidala, then you got to answer the question, why the hell does Kylo Ren look nothing like Han Solo?
Hold on. Back that truck up. First of all, I don't think she looks like her. If you're saying that she's a brunette skinny girl, okay, you got me. But I don't think in any other way they resemble each other. Second of all, if you look at pictures of Kylo Ren with his mask off, or that actor, Adam Driver, and put those up next to 1970s promo shots of Han Solo, there's a weird-ass splitting image thing going on.
No.
I'm not kidding, not dude.
Hans,
I'm glad they found someone uglier than Fat Darth Vader.
Fat Vader.
He's shockingly ugly, and I appreciated that.
Hey, come on now. He's not shockingly ugly.
No. You don't understand. An actual biological child of Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford would be a shockingly beautiful person. This person is ugly, and when you see him, you're like, whoa. The dark side really does make you dark, you know?
All right, I want you to look at this link I just sent you. It's Kylo Ren, but in Han Solo clothes.
Yeah.
On the cover
of GQ.
I'm okay with that.
I don't think he's shockingly.
He's not ugly. He's fine. He's fine.
You just sent us a GQ cover.
Yeah.
No, but like, you sent us the most photoshopped, made up. Image imaginable.
What do you want, the IMDb?
Well, he's not walking around San Francisco in Han Solo clothes just to get snapshot on TMZ.
Right, I'm saying in this movie, this character was portrayed as an ugly man. The mask comes off and you do not see a pretty face. You see an ugly face, a guy who's twisted with his troubles and so on.
Well, maybe that's why he's so angry, because he's got that darn handsome dad.
Wait, whose nose is this?
The conclusion, and I, like I say, you can get really far afield here, but the conclusion while watching the movie for me was this guy may not be their biological child. He may be some sort of adopted child. We're not getting the whole story. And Rey may not be, you know, biologically related to them either. She may have some connection, but it's not biological.
I think that there's two very telling moments for Rey, and that's when her interaction with Leia. It is not like a mother daughter; it's more like a mother family member hug when she gets back. And Luke's face when she's there is not like, "Hey, what the hell are you doing here?" He has a serious recognition, because he wouldn't be amazed by just someone showing up. I don't think, even with his lightsaber. I thought I lost that in space with my hand. I thought it was gone for good.
I gave that to an orange woman with goggles.
Yeah.
Right.
Hold on, wait. Where did his lightsaber go when his hand was cut off? Did they find it?
Somebody floated in space. There's like a whole story.
Well, no, not in space. It fell like it was in that Bespin, the Bespin pit.
Right.
Many Star Wars pits.
At least the hand. I was really hoping the hand would be attached to it. But it would have been much better.
Would you pray for my cold dead hand?
That's right.
And I think there's a couple of two interactions between the two primary characters with Rey, and then couple that with the fact that Star Wars, every bit of Star Wars is the Skywalker story, and you can't have a central character without it being a Skywalker.
Yeah, it feels like that's. I don't think that's too far of a bridge? How do you say it? It's not a bridge too far, because the whole idea of these like offshoot movies, like what are the two they're working on? For sure we know about Rogue One next year, and then
Episode 8 in May following year,
and then after that you got your Han Solo movie, and then after that Episode 9, and then after that you got your Boba Fett deal. Right. Those are the announced things. So I think they want to have those anthologies off on their own, untouched and unsullied by the main core trilogy. And then the core trilogy, I think it totally holds with the idea that this has always been the through line from episode 4, or let's call that the first movie, all the way up through those three, then the prequels, then this. It's always been a Skywalker story.
Mm-hmm. It's Skywalker and Friends. That's all this has ever been.
This is going to get really tedious if we're into episode 9 and everyone who survived episode 7 is still alive.
Well, I don't know if that'll be the case. Like Poe Dameron, as much as I like him, and we know from earlier script drafts that he was dead in this movie.
Right.
He definitely is not one of those guys that you have to make sure lives the entire time. I think they could sacrifice.
Yeah, but I'm asking whether Kylo Ren can be the big bad or the big enough bad for two more whole movies in the main line.
Possibly, but I really...
And if he doesn't, it could be interesting.
I loved his performance. I thought he was great in this.
I really hated him. I mean, they made us really... I mean, I was like, yeah, whatever, Kylo Ren, you're a little dick. But once he killed Han Solo, he elevated, just like Darth Vader, when he swiped Obi-Wan. I mean, he elevated my mind. I'm like, oh, you're a real dick. You don't really like you at all.
I agree him. He's a bad guy. And he actually, this movie establishes the dark side of the Force is way darker than the previous movies.
Yeah.
The dark side of the Force is pure evil now.
Yeah.
Which I would like to talk to some of our friends who identify with the dark side. Like, how are you feeling now about that red lightsaber?
Yeah, yeah.
But, I other than that killing of Han Solo, he spends the whole movie failing, and maybe kind of like Luke Skywalker spends the beginning of Empire Strikes Back failing. Mm-hmm. Maybe Kylo Ren turns it.
Maybe, but Darth Vader failed. Darth Vader was constantly failing, and everyone around him was failing. Like Darth Vader never succeeded. Really, he just
no. Like the first time we see Darth Vader, he's captured a ship. He's killing people. The next time we see him, he force chokes a dude. Kylo Ren doesn't ever even rise to those little levels of success.
Oh, I don't know about that. He stops a blaster thing in midair. He force chokes a dude.
That was cool.
He force chokes
blaster.
A dude across the room and then pulls the dude into his hand.
Yeah,
he can't successfully torture a girl.
Define success.
Yeah.
He got the information. He found out that... you know, where the resistance was hanging out.
That was portrayed
in the
as
same
him
place
losing
they
a battle
were
of the mines and slinking
30
out of
years.
Well, yeah, no, I agree. He definitely went, whoa, what the crap is this? What is she doing? How is she even in my head? How is this happening? Like, yeah, that definitely happened there, but that's because of who she is, not because he's bad at interrogating girls. Like,
he's also rubbish with a lightsaber. I mean, you know, the rubbish guy, the guy whose job was rubbish, picks up a lightsaber and holds his own.
No, that's, I'm so glad I'd forgotten to write that note down. The lightsaber battles in this film felt more real to me than the dance, than any of the prequels. Well, the prequels for sure, but even 4, 5, and 6, like, it was always like a timed, choreographed,
like
we hit up here, we hit down here. And it was, it was like, but it wasn't, it didn't feel like it was a, you know, we're putting on a show. It felt like
they were trying to kill each other.
This is the respect of the Force that we always begin these lightsaber battles with these, you know,
I liked it a lot.
10 and 2.
And if anybody still wants to know what those weird hilts on his thing are for, ask Finn's shoulder how that felt. That seemed like a pretty good tool.
The things I've read, I read some stuff about that afterwards, by the way. And the two streams coming out of there is like a vent. It's venting because Kylo Ren is not fully trained yet. He is not Darth Vader level like we saw Darth Vader in episode 4 and beyond. He is untrained at this point, and he's being trained by an ancient type of teaching.
Yeah, he's 1,000 years old, by the way.
Right.
According to,
so of course his anger is just off the hook. Whereas Darth Vader, even though he has anger, it's very, you know, it's very confined.
He had to train. He had to be told to channel it. He had to be taught how to channel it. Like, and he hasn't learned that at all. He's just like, F this room. I'm going to lightsaber everything.
Well,
I'm
how could you learn? How could you learn anything from Snarf? The dude is Skyping in all the time.
Snarf.
And then blowing up his hologram like he's 12 feet tall, whatever. We know you're just a little munchkin.
I really liked that stuff.
The Emperor did that too, don't forget.
I liked that stuff. I thought that was super rad, and I'm happy to see Andy Serkis do cool stuff, and I had
no problem. His voice was good. I'll give you that. The Andy Serkis voicings were spot on. They were different. I mean, I recognized it was Gollum immediately, but it was different. It wasn't the same as he has done before, and so I was very pleased with
that. Can you feel it? It's also nice to see the Ex Machina actors in the same movie.
Yes.
Again.
Yeah. Yes,
Hux and,
I did not pick up on that till you mentioned that today.
Hux and Poe back together after a rough time together in that mountain getaway, man.
Not a good time.
If only they were dancing to some Earth, Wind, and Fire together.
Okay, so what was your thing in this movie that felt out of place? The thing that you were like, looking back on the movie, that the was... Thing,
oh, I have the, one. Go ahead, though, Dunaway.
The thing that blew me away and just, I was just like, oh my God, my head's going to explode. That the Rebel Alliance or whatever they're called now are at the same, I mean, their base in technology looks exactly the same as it did 30 years ago. I mean,
they were
in the same place. I mean, and everybody's still in the same positions.
Let Brian have this. He's right.
No, he's not.
There wasn't any advancing. They hadn't advanced in iota. That was odd.
That's the beauty of Star Wars. You're not supposed to advance.
Well, the Empire advanced.
Weird. Yeah.
Well, did they?
Yeah, the new Death Star swallows a whole star.
They made it bigger.
It
I know it's...
Oh, well, yeah. The Star Killer, yeah. I get that. No, I understand what you mean by advancing, but like, well, okay, I understand what you mean.
Like they went back to the same set and said, let's do this.
That's a better answer to this question than I have, so I'm impressed, and I want to know
but that's what people said they wanted so much of, and they got it, and now I don't think we can complain about that. We wanted it to look like Star Wars. We didn't want it to look like 30 years have passed, and we have better Wi-Fi and better phones.
There could certainly be a reason for that, too. Like, we don't know that maybe it's just easier with the Empire's connections or the First Order's connections to get the things that they need to advance their technology.
Whereas it's the same people in the same setting, the same. I mean, they might as well have just walked out of the same freaking set from 30 years ago.
But that's what you want. And it's the same with fantasy movies. How many fantasy stories, books, movies, whatever are... This is 400 years since the passing of the first Blumble King. Hold on a minute. Everything's
really
the same.
Like
we just have swords and shit. There's no cars or jets or anything.
Stop a second. I really love this critique because BB-8's a much better droid and seems like he's more powerful and more smart and everything. And as you start to look around, the speeder that Rey rides early in the film is cooler. Seems like it's 30 years newer than the stuff you saw in episodes 4, 5, and 6. Now, I like this. This is a good nitpick.
I disagree.
I'm shocked that it never occurred to me while I was watching the film.
But I disagree because what you just described is advancements. Like, there is a better droid. You're right about that. It's got those cool cords.
So there's examples of all this advancement, but then when we go look at the Rebel base, there's still the flying X-Wings that look like even dirtier.
That's what we wanted, though. We didn't want the shiny shit.
The wings were different. I mean, a little bit different, right?
Yeah. The colors were cool.
Besides, we had version one of the X-Wings again in the prequels. I'm only mentioning all this prequel shit because I just watched them. But
The Stormtroopers had the wraparound black thing now instead of
Is it just me or all the Stormtroopers a little chunkier now? Seems like the old Stormtroopers were all very thin.
These guys are not clones anymore.
Yeah, they're not clones, so they're all different
shapes. Yeah, but I'm talking about the New Hope. I'm talking about...
No, they made bigger suits for this movie. There are bigger suits on bigger people.
Yeah, that's true.
There's no doubt in my mind.
Plus, Finn's
that's America. That's America, baby.
John Boyega's a little guy, too, so it's a little weird on him.
Come on, Scott Johnson, you're watching this movie. At some point, something felt like it didn't quite fit.
Oh, it totally did.
What?
I'll give you this one. It is... Oh, no, I've forgotten it. I had it before Dunaway started. Now I'm obsessed with the look of things.
I'm upset. I'm angry.
Hold on. No, what was it?
You want to think of it while I tell mine?
Yeah, go ahead. I'll think of it.
Yeah, it's the dude who's leading one of the death gangs that board Han Solo's ship felt like modern American dude. Or not modern American. Like, felt like one of the guys from Oasis. Right.
Yep. You got mine again. It's clear that Brian Ibbett and I are in the same train of thought, because that shot where suddenly you realize, oh, there's another rival gang of triads over here. I was like, man, where's Jet Li? This is not Star Wars anymore. There's this weird thing where
in a galaxy really close by, not so long ago.
Yeah. That was the thing that seemed the most out of place in this movie to me. Not the creatures, the evil creatures that they had to escape on that transport ship were great.
Oh, see, this shows how weirdly disparate we are on this, because I didn't have a problem with the guys on there. I had a huge problem with those big CGI blob monsters that were running through the halls.
With the tentacles and they're pulling Finn all the way across the ship?
No, I didn't. I mean, I like what they were doing, but they took me out of it a bit. They were the most CGI thing in the movie.
Oh, I love those things. I love that you never really get a clear look at them. Like, you know, it's a old slasher movie monster that you only ever see around the corner in the dark or whatever.
Just
the
got me a little bit. I don't know why. Just something about it.
I love those.
I'm with Scott though on that, because you know what? I mean, the entire time that they were chasing Han Solo, I was so Indiana Jones, and I'm like, there's like big boulders chasing Indiana Jones, and I was.
You're supposed to. That's
okay.
Good.
I wasn't sure if I was supposed to feel that or not.
Everyone here is aware of the whole deal that George Lucas, Han Solo, or rather Harrison Ford, tried to make with George Lucas back when they made Six. He wanted his character to die, and they. And Lucas says, no, I'm not doing that. He's one of our most important things. We're going to do other stuff. There's no way he's dying in this. And he was pissed. Like, Harrison Ford's like, well, I'm glad this is over because I don't want to do this anymore. And he really wanted to see his character sacrifice himself. And that his only reason for doing this new one, or the reason he agreed to do it, other than the millions of dollars you also get paid for doing it, I assume, so him and Callista can have a bigger ranch in Wyoming or whatever the hell they're doing.
Montana.
More earrings or whatever. But he said, yeah, I'll do it if you'll kill him. You got to kill him. And they did. So for me, that helped me with that scene. It did not help my daughter, who bawled the entire time. She was really upset. And one shot at Chewbacca going, after it happened, just put her over the edge, man. I was in consoling parent mode for the next 2 hours or something.
Yeah, I looked over at Tina, and I could have sworn she was crying, and she wasn't. But I got her a Kleenex.
Yeah.
And she looks over at me like, oh, you're not crying.
That is too funny.
And she like looks at me like, you just assumed that I'd be tearing up because of that. It's like, no, you looked like you're really tearing up.
You might have been tearing up, yeah. I mean, Carter really struggled with it. And it's you forget how that is the ultimate movie space guy friendship. Like, is there a better example of pals in the running through space than those two chuckleheads?
Not since Barf.
No, not since Barf. Well, you guys heard they're making a new one of those, right?
New Spaceballs?
Yeah. In response to this thing, they're going to do it. But no Barf, because John Candy's dead. Who would play Barf, I wonder?
Right.
Yeah.
There's a number of people who can play that role.
Horatio Sands.
Horatio Sands as Barf.
Bobby Moynihan.
Okay.
Bobby Moynihan.
Melissa McCarthy.
Okay.
Oh, that would even be even better. I'd love that.
That's not bad.
What are our four things that kind of left us a little off? The non-advancement of some of the tech. The triads in the hallway.
Boo.
What did Scott Johnson?
He didn't like the
CGI roller. The mad balls that were chasing him. They looked like mad balls.
I'd like to point out. No one, and I've talked to a lot of people, I've asked this question, no one who loves Star Wars and goes and sees this movie says, I didn't like all of the stuff that was perfectly mirroring earlier films. No one says, I didn't like that there was a desert planet or a droid carrying a flash drive or the phrase, I've got bad feelings about this or we got company. No one ever once said, I was taken out of the film by one of those things.
Because we love those things.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's weird. This movie proves that you can basically take a previous film, mash it up, cut it up, put it in different order, and the people who liked it will like it again.
Yeah. In a way, it's the safe thing. It's also the brave thing. And I think he straddled that really well.
Well, a friend of mine said
I think, you know, to kind of speak home to specific points in there, I don't think if you're J.J. Abrams, you even consider doing a Star Wars movie and not have somebody say the line, I've got a bad feeling about this.
Or we've got company.
Oh, yeah, we talked about this before the movie came out, didn't we?
We did.
Yeah.
You know, he had to do the crawl. He had to do, you know, there's certain things. The one thing I was actually expecting that didn't happen, nobody lost an arm or a hand.
Came close.
Well,
I
thought Kylo, I wasn't sure if Kylo Ren.
Nope, I looked very closely after that ending fight.
I thought both
hands were clasping like he was... He was moving all 10 fingers.
Yeah, his thing is his face scar he has now, that big giant saber thing she put across his head.
Right. Now, see, I think that was, I think.
Oh, I also don't like that the earthquake split them up perfectly, right? And I hate that.
Actually, I like that because that to me said that midichlorians were making their own statement.
Well,
I did actually like that. I thought the universe
was. You need
was
that in that moment up. because she starts to try to get off the planet, and she sees the Millennium Falcon leaving. Chewie's flying it, and she force texts him to tell him to pick her up.
Yeah,
and so in that moment, like you wouldn't have really bought it that she could just, you know, sort of scream silently, and Chewie would catch it and land in the right place, except that that whole sequence is a buildup of her powers.
Yeah.
You know, so I liked that. I like that right. earth dividing thing. I just want to, I want to quote a friend of mine who said this really perfectly. If there's a final point on all of that stuff that people are arguing about, complaining about, and that people like, it's that this film defines the difference between tribute and self-plagiarism.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't, I it does not fall into self-plagiarism. It really genuinely feels like, as a film, it loves the previous films.
It does, and it feels like it earns it. It feels like it owns it. It feels like care was taken. Like, it doesn't feel cheap and, oh, we're just showing you a bunch of stuff. Like, here's a lightsaber stuck in the snow. Everybody, remember that?
Everybody go watch all the other movies and make a list of all the scenes you liked.
Yeah.
We're gonna shoehorn.
Because there's definitely moments of like, oh yeah, that thing's very much like this, or the droid's got the message, better get the droid back. You know, like all these things jump out, but they just washed over me in a warm way. Mm-hmm. Never once did I go, oh, that's freaking stupid. Why'd they do that?
One last complaint. If you're trying to catch a droid that's got your flash drive, and it leaves this long, even trail in the sand, it's really easy to follow.
Well, maybe he hopped up on his little cords and jumped around like a spider for a while.
Well, there was wind, too. I mean, there's a lot of things that could
explain
why they weren't able to.
That was just bizarre to me. It was early in the film, and they're like, find that droid. We lost it, sir. Yeah. What? How could you lose that droid?
Well, no. They didn't know that it was in a BB-8 droid until they got Poe back on the ship, and Kylo force texted it out of his head.
Yeah.
You say that now, but when I was watching the movie, it took me out of it. That little fact that this droid leaves this really obvious trail.
Here's the only part that truly took me out. Because I just thought of it when you're talking about the sand. So they made a warning earlier, don't go to the northern plains because that swallows up people or whatever. When it swallowed the TIE fighter and Finn's looking around for Poe and can't find him, it wasn't a bad scene. It was just, I didn't know, was there a creature doing this or was it just weird quicksand? Because it burped at the end or something, right? Didn't it go?
There was like a could have been an organic sand noise. Well, there you go. I mean, that's one of those things that we want to know more about. It. Will we ever find out more? Like, we want to know more about the Sarlacc.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
maybe this was another Sarlacc.
It could have been or something like it because, again, they're just mixing up this, you know. Taking these old movies, like the thing with Han Solo and the Sun, calling him Ben, evocative of Ben Kenobi in his final fight with Vader. They're alone. He's the Obi-Wan Kenobi of this chapter, and there's your up-and-coming Vader. It's that face-off again. The stakes are much higher, and the cost is much greater, I think, because Obi-Wan Kenobi's like, well, it's time for me to go. I need to just stand up straight, hold my saber up, and let Vader have his way. And I'm going to ascend to the next level of Jedihood, right? Well, this was like even harsher than that. It was like,
it's your father. Out of nowhere.
Right, it's your father. You're his son. He cares about you. He named you Ben. Your namesake is one of the great Jedi masters of all time. Like, that was a really pretty powerful stuff, even though a lot of it was written on the wall. We kind of saw it coming or whatever. I don't know if you guys noticed, but the light that was coming in there shut off right as, you know, he made his decision to go ahead and run Dad through and kick him off the side. And it was all very, you know, kind of poetically handled. And I thought that was really, really good. But again, evocative of everything we've seen before from 4 through 6. It was all very 4 through 6, shuffle the cards. Here's an idea. Let's have a lightsaber in the snow that they need to force pull out of it. Boy, I haven't seen that before.
Yeah. Were you guys as surprised as me? Were you as surprised?
I was surprised at you, yes.
As I was at Harrison Ford acting at his age.
He
seemed spry. He seemed funny.
Oh, he hasn't been this energetic in years.
Yeah. If you see him interviewed the last decade on The Late Show or whatever, I couldn't believe it was the same guy. This is a miracle of directing.
Yeah,
it is, and it's such a great. We were hoping George and I were talking before the film, and he's like, God, I hope we're getting the episode 4 Han Solo. That's kind of, you know, cocky and funny and sarcastic and, oh, take the professor in the back and see if he can talk to the hyperdrive and stuff like that. And because if you think about it, in Return of the Jedi, he was much more sour. Like he was.
That's because he didn't want to be there.
It's because he wanted to die.
Can't believe y'all enthralled me for this.
Yeah, it sucks. Right. I want to go Indiana Jones movies the rest of my life. Get out of here, Bert.
Right. But it was good to see that Han Solo. It was good to see the, you know, the episode four Han Solo.
Yeah.
Tender moment with him and Leia, which is great. Mm-hmm. And then
fantastic. I really liked her very subdued. This is a very non Carrie Fisher performance, because if it was actual Carrie Fisher,
she'd be drunk.
Oh,
have you seen that?
It would have been wild, dude.
Yeah.
Like she, did you hear her response to everybody freaking out about the slave Leia dolls and the dads getting upset about him? And I loved her response. She said, he says, I was enslaved and made to wear that stupid outfit by a giant sweaty testicle. And he says, and in the end, I would like to remind everybody that I used that same chain you're all worried about being an S&M object and strangled to death the giant testicle.
That's right.
Tell your daughters that part of the story. I just thought, yeah, dude.
Yeah, her awesome. As well as Harrison Ford was directed, I didn't feel like Carrie Fisher was well directed in this film. The Leia character came across as just old and withered, and it was unfortunate.
They didn't really use her.
Well, maybe that's what they intended. Maybe they didn't want to have.
They're going to always say that they.
It's less interesting. I agree with you. It's less interesting than what they did with Ford and others. But she was fine.
When you think about Princess Leia, you know the you're a little short for a stormtrooper. You know you came in that. You're braver than I thought. Like that person. Is funny and she's witty and she's really fast. She delivers fast, and this person is so slow.
Hey, that the world needs Mon Mothmas too.
Oh, yes, they do. Absolutely. I'm just saying that there's a counterpoint to how great Harrison Ford was directing for me. And I brought all of that up to ask you guys, since we don't have clips to play. If anybody has a favorite quote from this film, I have one that I just I walked out loving this movie for some of the quotes.
Mine was ball move.
That was pretty good. In fact, my wife and I had a real good laugh when he said that, and that was also very episode four on Solo.
And it even felt improv too.
Yeah, it might have been.
Yeah, been. Ball
move. Yeah.
I can't think of one. Dunaway, you got one?
First quotes go, no, just, I mean, because so much of it was stuff we'd heard before, and it was just like, I've got a bad feeling about this, that kind of stuff may have kind of stolen the show from any other dialogue that I may eventually find.
So, like, you know, Han trying out Chewie's weapon for the first time ever. And
that,
saying,
yeah, like that's not this. Really a quote, yeah.
Well, no, that's true, it wasn't.
All right, I like this one. I liked it. It was more of an exchange than a quote, but the exchange between Rey and that stormtrooper that turned out to be...
Oh, my gosh. If you haven't James done this Bond. Yet, and I assume everybody listening to this episode has seen the movie up at this point, the next time you use the bathroom at work, go into a stall and then wait for someone to come in the bathroom and say, you will remove these restraints and leave the cell with the door open.
That's true. And drop the gun.
I did that today, and it was the funniest uproar of laughter I've ever heard.
I think it's when everyone's always like, well, what big quotes are going to be said over and over from this movie? And I have a feeling that exchange or parts of it will end up being
used.
So that was probably my favorite.
The cell with the door open.
And then James Bond says, I will tighten these restraints, scavenger scum. This is great, dude. That was a really good scene, and I like just how it played with, again, remixing old ideas from the series and then earning a new twist on it. Was just great to watch that. I mean, I'll say right now, I said it in I was doing Current Geek earlier, and it was all Star Wars on that show too, but Rey's up in my like top three Star Wars characters of all time. Mm-hmm. I really I went in not expecting anything, came out thinking she was the frickin' bomb.
And really liked her. Was one of the other two, I'm guessing.
Which one, who?
Nia Nub.
Yeah, Nia Nub, always a winner. It's nice to see Ackbar back in the control room. At first, I was like, wait, is this like Son of Ackbar or another one of the Mal Kamarians?
That's what I would have figured. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's him. And it was the voice actor. Ackbar. Yeah, it's the voice actor, too, who did the original. So it was kind of cool. Anyway, and he was a totally prosthetic, stupid head, too. It wasn't even like some CGI head. It was fantastic. All right, so who else? Who's got a quote?
I really enjoyed the jokes. The movie has great comic relief. I don't remember a joke that I was just groaning at. You know, like my favorite joke in the movie was where they're trying to plan and scheme how to stop this huge calamity. And Finn says, we'll figure it out. We'll use the Force. And Han Solo just through his teeth, just yells at him, that's not how the Force works.
Yeah, that was very much a Chewie. I love when you get mad and yell. I wondered if some of that dialogue was maybe taken from previous movies because they had a lot of robustness and sort of early late 30s, early 40s on Solo sound to them. So I wasn't sure about that. But there was another great exchange where Poe Dameron says, "Are you helping me?" And Finn says, "Or why are you helping me?" Finn says, "Because it's the right thing to do." And Poe says, "You need a pilot." Finn says, "I need a pilot.
I need a pilot."
That's great. They were not afraid to be goofy and funny. And that's important in a Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, who hasn't done a quote?
Dunaway hasn't, but
give us one. Yeah.
Well, I can cheat. I can say I went to the IMDb quote page, and I did like the when how excited Rey was when she was saying, "You're offering me a job," and Han Solo says, "I'm considering it."
everything having to do with Han Solo in this movie.
It was a great tribute to a character that everyone loves. Yeah, it was really good. Escape Now, Hug Later was another good one here.
That's such a great scene. That's my second favorite scene, and of course it involves Rey. Like, we're talking about Rey all the time.
Yeah.
The best scene in the film is her with the helmet on. The second best is when Finn shows up and says, "No, I came for you. I came to rescue you." And they hug, because you realize this is the first time in her entire life she has ever felt like she belonged hugging somebody. Mm-hmm. Like she spends up until that point, she's constantly telling him things like, "Stop taking my hand. What are you doing?"
Yeah. Right.
Like, she has no personal contact with people ever.
Yeah, nope.
And finally, it dawns on her, oh, he actually came for me. This is special. This means something.
Yeah.
And they hug. And it's a really good moment.
It's a nice moment.
I love that it's followed with that joke.
Yeah, it was sweet. And I like the, who did Simon Pegg play? The arms dealer guy.
That's my ship.
Yeah, that guy. That was great.
Fat, I wonder if he's going to come back and do something, because he was the one who was taking care of Rey and whoever dropped her off.
Sort of.
Did they sell her? I mean, did he kind of?
He's Jabba the Hutt taking care of her, yeah. Like, he's kind of an ass. I mean, I'll give you half a ration for all this. Like, well, you're a giant, you're a huge slug dick. What are you
doing?
You're an
Unkar Plutt. See, his Uncle Plutt is what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, Uncle Plutt.
Uncle Plup? P? With a P?
It's Plutt.
Oh.
Unkar Plutt is his name. Plutt.
It sounds like someone just took a dump and made a sound about it.
Come on, Uncle Buck. Plutt.
His name is Uncle Buck.
Well, there you go then. That works great. All right. What else we got here?
Love, just because we haven't brought it up yet, as far as special effects goes, the destruction of the Starkiller base, where it implodes and it's, you know, pulled in first to kind of explode out. Amazing.
Yeah, like, that looked really cool.
You know, when we think about all the work that Lucas did to make the explosions better for the special editions.
Don't even get me started on the Star Killer. This improbability of sucking stars and floating around is whatever. The physics is just
pulling the sun's power to. That was like red matter from the Trek movie
from
that
Star
Abrams
Trek.
Did. Yeah, that's what it reminded me of. It was like, oh yeah, you got a mysterious way to pull the sun's power. Yeah, I forget the fact that the sun.
It used it used up that sun, so when it did it again, that means it had to move to a different sun. It like I said, it was kind of distracting. I just tried to ignore it. I was like, it's okay, Brian.
It's all right, Star Wars.
That is a good point. What does it do when it needs to move? Does it have little jets on the side of it, or do they tow it with a bunch of TIE fighters? Or
do
they point it in the opposite direction and then shoot some red poop out of it
The backside, I think the whole thing has the whole trench around the whole planet, right?
No, it was just a trench base. Looked like it was only around like a third of it.
Oh, I thought the whole thing was like a Pokeball that was like open, you know, but maybe I got that wrong.
Like I said, I didn't want to know too much about the physics of it. I'm like, okay, I'm done.
I liked it in the sense that it was the bad guys in Star Wars always have to have a giant planet destroying nightmare of a weapon. And this was
hopefully, to the next level. Hopefully not always.
I think they always will. let me back that up. If when they do episode 8, because what did they do last time? 8 had nothing.
When you figure out how to make a tank, you keep working on that tank until you get it right.
Yeah. Making it bigger and
I
bigger.
I like it.
Too.
I don't have a problem with it. And I really liked in 6, one of my favorite things was an unfinished Death Star fight. That was super cool.
Mm-hmm.
So why not go for the next big thing? And you know, to their credit, they wiped out an entire system, not just an Alderaan, but an entire system of planets. And
that's pretty cool.
One shot. I thought that stuff was super rad. And again, I know it's like a Star Wars trope up the butt here, but I still like it. I like it up the butt is what I just said.
Wow.
I swear. Right.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, what else? So let's say, what was our, let's actually ask, what was our favorite favorite special effect in the entire thing.
Special effect. Okay, gosh. So then, yeah.
So for you, it's the planet, would you say?
Starkiller blowing up. Yeah, that was just...
No.
Just right. So well done.
What'd you say, Randy?
Actually, the thing that stuck with me from all of that was when they... when the Empire... what are they called again?
First Order.
First Order shows up to destroy Maz Kanata's little temple.
Yeah.
And she's got the statue of herself up there, and that thing comes down. The way that you see it is just enough of a distance to feel like they have really just like laid waste to this place. And of course, then you see everybody running around on rubble.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, there was something about that destruction of that building. Because when you first see it, it looks really old. It looks 1,000 years old, like it was built by the Mayans in Central America. And now you're seeing it come down, and the way that was depicted, it just really stuck with me. These guys aren't messing around. I realize I just saw them destroy whole planets. Didn't mean as much to me as Maz Kanata's statue coming down.
No, it made it personal. It's like flying out of New Orleans. When you're on the ground, you think you're in hell, but when you're above it all, it looks like a little toy place.
Right.
Play with toys. It's kind of like that. So you don't think of it as a big a deal. We talked about this on Current Geek too. The idea that wiping out all those planets didn't have anywhere near the impact that it should, perhaps. And this is just a human thing, because we don't, what did Homer say? It's funny because I don't know him, or
right,
there's other quotes like that where it's like, well, unless you've got a personal interest in those people that you saw about to die, you just don't care. I mean, you care, but you don't care in a micro way. But we care in a micro way when, you know, characters that we've sort of fallen in love with are in peril.
Right.
I really felt when they blew up the systems, I really felt like that's necessary to express how important that weapon is to them.
Right.
But then I started thinking, and I think Jury may have brought this up on the other show I was on. He said that, well, what's the difference between this and Alderaan blowing up? Well, there really isn't one. The only difference is that Leia made it a little more personal by saying, no, my family's there, my father's there, or whatever, and then boom. But other than that...
Oh, and then Obi-Wan gets his line. It's the beginning and end. Before they blow up the planet, she's freaking out. After they blow up the planet, Obi-Wan is rocked. Mm-hmm. You get this whole sense. This movie kind of missed some opportunities.
Well, what would Obi-Wan have done? Shit his pants when the whole system went out? Like, you make a good point. Like, that really rocked him. What was the next best Jedi thinking right then? Was Luke on that island planet going, oh, shit, they took out a whole thing.
Ooh, they took out the whole, what are they, the Senate? No,
there was some speculation that planet they destroyed was Coruscant, but it's not, something else.
All right.
Other name. According to Tom, I don't know where he found that, but
oh, okay.
Comic, read all the books.
Comics maybe or something. It might be the comics. I can't remember. But
Comdex.
Comdex. It's from Comdex. They destroyed all of Comdex.
They destroyed Comdex.
Yeah. And everyone went, oh, and then we got E3 and it was fine.
Right.
It's a film that's full of great stuff, and it's a good thing that there are so many big wide open spaces to fly spaceships into that you can turn around and fly back out of.
Yeah. Right.
Thank goodness for that.
Well, that's just a testament to how damn good Poe Dameron is.
Yeah. When he was flying all over the sky, just killing everything up there. That was pretty great. It's
Bruno Mars in an X-Wing fighter.
Nice.
I almost wanted him bald in a beard and glasses and having a company called Blue Book, because he could not look different, more different
right.
than he does
no,
in those two
no,
movies.
Exactly.
Super weird. All right. Any final thoughts on the fine production known as Star Wars?
I hope this holds up as well 6 months from now. I hope it holds up. Really, I'm not going to know if this movie holds up until the next movie. And then I can look back well and go, oh,
that's well, how about when going. You see it at home? Will that make a difference, do you think? Like, will you?
No, I'm going to definitely get this. I think it's going to be about the same experience as I had. Because the things that I loved are the things that I'm probably always going to love, which is seeing all the desolation of the old Empire and, you know, the old battles and watching the Millennium Falcon zip in and out and, you know, close to the surface. I love all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that's going to change any.
Spelunking in an old Star Destroyer is a really cool concept.
That was really cool. Yeah.
Let's all take a guess at in 10 years, we'll make a note to come back and talk to each other about this, whether, no matter where we are, what we're doing, how many times we think we're going to buy this movie over the next 10 years.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. What formats? Hopefully none.
Hopefully. Jeez.
No. I can honestly wait until I can get 7, 8, 9 in a package.
All in one box?
Yeah, I will go again.
What if there's deleted scenes?
I refuse to come out of this episode of Film Sack as the guy who hated episode 7. I'm going to go pay money to see this again as soon as possible.
Yeah.
I don't need to have it taken up room on my shelf yet.
Yeah. Well, I am going to say something. It's not controversial or probably even surprising for a lot of people, but I've been getting asked constantly in the year that Mad Max Fury Road and this came out at the same time, and all I could do is not shut up about Mad Max and how much I loved it. Now, where do I stand? I still think Mad Max is a better movie. I'd put this right up there with one of the best things I've seen this year, and the most fun, and maybe more important, or, you know, to my childhood being capped off in my adulthood or something. But I think Mad Max is a superior film in lots and lots of ways.
There's more originality to it.
Yeah,
you know what the story's. Go ahead.
You know what the third film in this discussion is in 2015? Yeah. The third film that's a tribute to a previous movie. Mm. Jurassic World.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
True story.
And, but that thing, I don't know, man. I liked it. I had a good time, but it is. I forgot most of it already. It's like, what the hell even happened in that? I don't know. T-Rexes?
And that's what I was going to say. But Jurassic World belongs in the discussion. For whatever reason, you haven't been watching it over and over like you have Mad Max. The question is, will Force Awakens end up being more like Jurassic World or more like Mad Max for you in the long run?
Mm. Right in the middle. Just like it is now.
Probably.
Brian Dunaway will not take a stand.
Because I have a really high regard for the original Jurassic Park, and I still have a high regard for it. And I think that World is in a lot of ways, World is doing to it what I'm saying Episode 7 is doing to 4. In a lot of ways, it's rewriting the same damn story. But I think this did a better job of doing that with much more sacred, sacrosanct objects in Star Wars than I would consider sacred or sacrosanct in Jurassic Park. So I guess I don't feel like the Jurassic Park thing is as important, but I think, you know, like it's kind of like Indiana Jones. I think that movie, that series is amazing, at least until it got dumb. But I wouldn't say that was more important than a Star Wars reboot or remake or whatever. Like, not even close. Like, there's something more important about Star Wars. Like, all those other movies I just mentioned owe their lineage to Star Wars in some way. At the very least, ILM is working on all of it, you know?
Right.
John Williams
music. Yeah, exactly. There's a pedigree there that Star Wars began and started, and that's hallowed ground. So for them to do this and do it successfully, I think was no small feat, and I'm way impressed, and I hope J.J. Abrams is getting lots of sleep now because he doesn't need to stress about the world hating him, although there are a lot of dicks on the internet, and they all need to shut up about all this Ray stuff. I'm serious. I've had it with that. So dumb.
Oh, come on.
It's so dumb.
You know what Lucas is doing? He's kicking back going, told you they would be a bunch of buttholes.
Yeah.
Can we get on to John Williams? Is it time in the show to grade this soundtrack?
I loved it. What do you think? Well, that was great. I mean, it's derivative of every other Star Wars movie, but it's good.
I thought it was Star Wars.
I don't want to say I was disappointed. I was underwhelmed by the fact that I didn't at any time in this film say, oh, there's a new theme that I like I'm hearing right now for the first time. That never happened to me.
Well, you've never heard this right here. Oh, I'm sorry. We've heard that every time.
Right.
there was a scene when Ray is sliding down the it's funny, this is the moment that I actually did like take note of the music. The only point in the film where I actually like, oh, I really like this theme.
Do you think it's called Ray's theme?
It might be Ray's theme. It's when she's sliding down the dunes after spelunking in the Star Destroyer.
Is this it right here? This is it.
Yeah.
Yeah, where it's kind of a little jaunty, a little
Yes.
Oh yeah, it's really good, dude.
Yeah.
I wish, and I'm going to go listen for all that in a second viewing, but I wish there had been more of what John Williams is great at, which is bringing a brand new theme, a feature theme into a movie that by all accounts doesn't need it. You know, I would have really liked for there to be more to this score, and I'm guessing he's aged out at this point. I'm guessing that they're going to have Michael Giacchino start doing the scoring.
Well, he was his second hand in all this anyway, right? Like did all the conducting and stuff. So yeah, just like Chewbacca. What's his name was barely in the suit.
Everybody has a second.
Michael Giacchino
Han Solo, who doesn't need one.
Michael Giacchino was in the movie. He was one of the many pseudo celebrities, friends of J.J. Abrams, who was a stormtrooper. There's tons of them, and I was surprised actually that Michael Giacchino got into a stormtrooper outfit. It made me think, oh well, maybe he's a big Star Wars fan. Maybe he's gonna, you know, take the scoring of these films in a awesome direction. I hope so.
It was nice to see a new Porkins in the form of another J.J. Abrams friend.
Grunberg.
Grunberg.
Yeah. Good old Grunny.
Snap, Wexley.
He lived, which is good. But he definitely was the new Porkins. I was having fun by the end of that movie. I was having fun picking out the throwbacks.
Yeah.
Like, lightsaber in the snow. I got that one. Let's see what else you got for me. Oh, the little tiny robots on the station.
Little mouse droids,
beep, 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 all over the place.
Gronk droids or whatever they're called.
Yeah, yep. And then there's always somebody that one of our heroes will bump into and he'll say, oh, excuse me. And the guy will go, O-tuta, or whatever. He'll say some stupid thing. Like this guy.
How many languages do you speak?
Never mind. That's English. That's English.
Did you notice that BB-8 was more understandable?
No.
BB-8's speech.
I don't think. You think? I mean, I don't think that he. No, well, I don't think any more so than R2-D2.
Okay, well, I think I do.
I think a little bit, yeah.
And I noticed it, and I went and looked it up, and found out that Bill Hader was making bleeps and bloops for BB-8, and I think that's awesome.
What?
Yes, Bill Hader.
That is awesome.
He's living the dream. Hey, what do you do for a living? I work on South Park now with my friends. I used to be on SNL. Oh, and I did BB-8 noises, and occasionally I'll make a movie that'll make $1 billion, and I'm kind of cool still. Like, that guy's great.
Yeah, he's getting those residuals from Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs and Inside Out now. That guy is doing very well.
Wow. So Bill Hader, on record, did the beeps for BB-8.
Yes.
He did Consultation. The performance was done by two other people, correct?
Oh, is it? I don't know.
Yeah.
I came out of the movie. I looked it up. I read an article about how Bill Hader and some buddy of his came in and wrote lines for BB-8 and then performed them. I don't know if they were the final performance you actually hear, but I looked that up because while watching the movie, BB-8 seemed much more understandable to me than R2-D2 ever did.
Interesting.
Right.
Well, good job, Bill Hader. May you ever reign as my favorite SNL guy that wasn't on the show in the 80s and 90s. All right. Well, what else? That's it, I guess. That's our thing. That's our deal. I think we should do this for big releases. I like the idea of occasionally putting out a film sack that says Batman v Superman. What did we think? Or, you know, the big hallmark.
The new Star Trek.
Yeah. The tentpole moments. Exactly. I'm actually really anxious about that. I want to see that. The new one.
Fast and the Furious in space.
Well, dude, Lin's a good director. The guy knows action like nobody's business. The question is, everyone's disavowing that trailer. Including
I'm not.
Simon Pegg is who wrote the movie.
I saw the trailer. I didn't mean to see the trailer. It was thrust into my life. I saw the trailer and came away giddy.
So you like the approach. Okay. I just worry that with everyone disavowing it, the worry is that the tone is not like the movie at all, because not that the trailer's bad, but that it's just not indicative of the film.
I hope it's not. I trust Simon Pegg. I love his stuff. I trust him. I think it's going to be all right.
By the way, Tom Merritt just confirmed via a whole nother conversation that he did the vocal models, and they used that to create the electronic sounds that BB-8 made. So when he's making noise, that's freaking Bill Hader.
Wow.
Crazy.
That is crazy.
You're double checking me in real time.
No,
Tom Merritt.
No, I'd sent him an email.
Tom Merritt, Randy said.
I sent him an email about the James Bond thing, and he replied back with this. And did you know? So I'm just saying, you've got to. I didn't fact check, but it just happened to come in my email.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey, Tom.
Factcheck.org.
Hey, Tom, is it true it's pronounced machete? We'll see what he says. Just kidding. All right. Well, there's your coverage. I really enjoyed this and really loved that movie. Going to see it again on Christmas Day. I'm sure none of us are quite through watching it before it hits the home circuit. Although this will be nice. Back in the day, Star Wars movies would take like a year and a half to come out on video.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Not anymore, though. I'll bet we have this by... When do you think we'll have this? We'll have this by spring?
Let's see. Yes, probably.
Probably early summer.
March, April.
Because they'll still hold it as long as they can.
Theaters. This is going to be in theaters for...
Oh, that's true, because it's not going to even launch in China until somewhere in January, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. January something, which means... The worldwide take of $500 million on opening weekend. Right. That doesn't even only include the China market.
Only the biggest market in the world.
Yeah. Or the manyest of peoples.
Right.
There are many of the peoples there. yeah. Yes, Randy.
I had something I wanted. This is the first time I've ever seen a movie that showed overnight at our big major Cineplex in town. It ran at, there was a start time at 2:30 a.m. There was a start time at 4 a.m. between the Thursday and the Friday. That is
Thursday
amazing.
And the Friday?
I'd be worried about who would be there then. I don't know why. I would worry about that, like my safety. Like a guy that's a guy wants to see a movie at 3 o'clock in the morning, unless he's a swing shifter or something. I don't know, man. That seems weird to me. Seems too late.
It's amazing. It is truly amazing. Like I find it odd when movies start after 10. Mm. This film was actually showing overnight. Movie theaters were willing to pay people extra to come in and change the reels in the middle of the night.
That reminds me, before we end this, real quick, impressions as to whether or not you give a care about a new Independence Day sequel or not. Because that trailer showed us.
Okay. I do, actually. I saw the trailer twice, and I'm kind of in. I'm looking forward to it. Certainly more than the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or...
Oh, yeah. I'm more excited about the Independence Day than I am the Star Trek movie.
Whoa.
Oh,
wow. I mean, you know how much I hate the first one, but this one, I mean, it's a trailer, but the tone seemed good to me. So maybe I'm back in, and I really like what's his name. But this is the second time he's done this.
Jeff Goldblum,
where he's gone big Jurassic Park, but he's only kind of a secondary player. And then the sequel, he's the main guy. And in this one, it's kind of the same thing. You know, there's no Will Smith. You got bearded president. Was that other guy supposed to be the new Will Smith, or is he just a younger black soldier man?
Well, just a younger soldier man. I don't think he's
in the comic book series in between the last Independence Day and this one. Will Smith's character is killed in the line of duty. Spoiler:
is he really?
Right.
Shut up.
Do
there
we
are
know
comics.
That, really?
Is that a comic thing for real? Or are you making that up?
I don't know. It's something I read on the internet.
It doesn't sound like too far fetched to me. But anyway, I was sad to hear Will Smith wasn't coming back. And also, we already know Randy Quaid's character is dead. Otherwise, bring him back.
Of course.
Yeah, have him fly out of the bum of the ship.
I was disappointed.
I used the hypercard stack to get out.
What, Randy?
Admittedly, the president's speech from the first film is the best thing in the film. Right. But using it to narrate the entire trailer just did nothing for me. I was like, I don't understand why... I'm hearing this.
I know why, because at the end he wasn't able to say Independence Day, get cut off at the end because the aliens, you know, are winning. It's like the dark middle chapter of the 30-year film franchise.
It was confusing. It was confusing my brain because I was trying to pay attention to what I'm seeing is going to happen in this next film.
Yeah.
But I'm hearing this thing from the previous film, and my brain's like, oh, look, there's a whole new sort of, like, I want a TV series on Netflix exposing me to the world now.
Yeah.
That they've got this new technology and so forth.
That I would be into. I'm with you on that. It feels like we're ripe for that sort of thing anyway, and you could even get Goldblum to do it. So it's just a little weird to say, hey, you guys remember 25 years ago? Well, we got a sequel coming. It just feels a little weird.
It's called Star Wars.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it's called...
but you know what I mean. Like, part of me likes that, and part of me hates that. Like, part of me is like, cool, dude, let's see what happened 20 years. We used all their tech and made better defenses, but it wasn't enough. And, you know, great. Or is it dumb because it took him this long to do it? I don't know. Is it still in the public consciousness?
It always comes to, what do you have in the script? Mm. Everything we were talking about, for the most part, is what do you have in the script? If someone came along and said there's going to be a Clueless 2, you would ask, is it funny? Is it fun? Is it, you know, Alicia Silverstone is now 40 years old. Like, is it funny? That's all you really care about.
Doesn't
if
that
it's
exist?
Funny,
I think that's
you'll
exist.
Go see it. You'll like it.
Isn't that a thing? I think it exists, isn't it?
Oh God, seriously.
Doesn't it Clueless 2? Hold on. Clueless 2. Isn't there a Clueless? Oh, I guess not. Why did I think there were two of those? Oh, I know why. I'm thinking of Legally Blonde 2.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right,
yeah.
Right,
right. Another dumb 90s movie. Yes. Take that, everyone who's going to write us now and complain that we don't like those.
But like, how can you not like,
you know,
Reese Witherspoon?
Anchorman 2 was that on the other side of the dividing line between tribute and self-plagiarism. Yeah. And I don't think many people came away feeling like Anchorman 2 was a great movie.
No, it's not one. But maybe Independence Day can break that chain and do it right and not have the only person who survived the blast in the city be the president lady. The lady president, or the first lady, just sitting there in the rubble going, if I could just sit here long enough, Will Smith will come by and take me to the White House. Anyway, I hate that movie. Let's get out of here. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Oh, yes. Oh, I wanted to ask you guys, did anybody get a trailer that they loved?
Oh, I think the Harry Potter thing looks good. Mm-hmm. The
I
Dangerous
love the
Creatures.
Zootopia bit with the sloths.
Oh, yeah,
that was
really
hilarious.
Funny. Super funny. How can... I help you. Dude, the sloths are the... And when he got told the joke and his face slowly turns into a big giant smile, I was laughing so hard. That was really funny. But we didn't get any cool... none of the video game ones everyone talks about, like Uncharted or the WoW Legion one or even the Overwatch one. We just got a bunch of...
Oh, you didn't get the Overwatch commercial.
No, I was sad. Oh, I went in anticipating it because I'd seen the web link for it and I thought, oh, maybe we'll get it, and we didn't get it.
So. Seeing that Overwatch commercial on a huge screen with 400 people was really fun.
No, it's super great. I love it. And did you ever end up seeing it, Ibbett? We talked about it this morning. You need to see it if you haven't. It's super cool.
The Overwatch trailer? Yeah. No, you were going to give me a link.
I know, and I forgot. I'm a dumbass.
Oh, thanks a lot. Yeah. Instead, you gave me a link to Bollywood bandstand.
It was pretty good.
That was really funny.
Yeah, it's so weird. Anyway, did you have a trailer there at Dunaway that you liked?
No, it was called let's get some more popcorn.
Yeah, it's called Butter Up That Popcorn.
Screw the trailers, I can watch these at home.
Who got reserved seating besides me? Anyone?
Nope.
Our theater has 10 screens, and out of those 10 screens, 5 of them were showing Star Wars. I went on a Friday night at 7. I had no trouble getting in. I saw the 3D version. I got there 30 minutes early, and I was like the fourth person in line. Believe it or not, there was a huge line for the 2D version.
Yeah,
and it wrapped all the way out to the door.
Because 3D is poo. Because it's poo.
I guess so. Didn't bother me any. I was fine with it.
Hate it. 3D is poo. You wear glasses that have been in someone else's face, and they've got a little bit of poo on them. They don't ever get washed off completely.
Rectum.
And you pay more for the ticket, and your eyes hurt the whole time, and you have a headache when you leave. I hate it. Can't do it. But I'm a special
case.
So
did no one, excluding Brian Dunaway, did no one think that Captain America 3 or X-Men Apocalypse was great?
I'd already seen those.
I didn't get a preview for Apocalypse, but I did see the same Avengers or Captain America one.
Yeah, it looks great. I just already had seen it. But yeah, it looks awesome.
All right.
It's my favorite of the Marvel movies of that last one, so I have high expectations.
For that new go Warcraft. Go Warcraft.
Go Warcraft, everyone. June 2016. Be there or be square. Let's get out of here. Big thanks to everybody for listening. Filmsack.com is our website. Don't forget, you can always leave us voicemails here. We'll read some more in our next episode, 801-471-0462. Filmsack@gmail.com. We are on Twitter as Filmsack. And Merry Christmas to everybody. And happy
freaking
Christmas. Hope everyone has a great holiday. Looking very much forward to a 2016 Film Sack episodes.
Look what I got you. It's Wing Commander.
Wing Commander's up next. That'd be great. Speaking of Mark Hamill, well, he's not in it, but he was in the game version, Wing Commander 3, so there's a connection there. We got more acting out of Mark Hamill in Wing Commander 3 than we got out of the entirety of Episode 7. So,
yep.
So that's all right. Anyway, I guess it's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Yes.
We'll see you next time.
Ray.
The show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more
at frogpants.com.